The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thank you for joining us on to Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6. The host for part of our show tonight within The Parent Show would be myself, Andrea Nicolai. And as always, I'm delighted to spend few good quality minutes in your company and the company of my guests. As you already know, at Mix 92.6, we do love local. Reason why I am happy that John Salinger from London Colney Youth Football Club has agreed on to putting together with myself this lovely interview. We know how important is exercising, even if we do it as a hobby or as at a professional level, no matter the sport. But we also know the importance of football, not just at a national, but international level. Hello, Joan, and thank you for being here with us for the parts of our show this evening.
Thanks, Adriana. Thanks very much for inviting me.
My absolute pleasure. Right. So to get more of an insight into, because I know how many football fans are out there, I will start with my first question. When was the football club founded and what was the dream target behind this project?
Well, the club itself was formed. Sorry, London Colney Youth Football Club was formed in 2015. It was the idea of Trevor Andrews, who basically his son was playing in another team and just fancied a bit of a change and fancied running his own youth football club. And basically, it was a vision of providing a platform for grassroots football for children from the local community in and around London Colney and the St Albans area.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, I know the importance of this. What are the age groups that London Colney Youth Football Club can cover? What's the range?
So with regard to sort of playing, we have teams who can compete in matches from, you know, under sevens up to under 18s. We also have a soccer school, which is basically from fours upwards. So basically, you know, to develop their football training, you know, and that creates a pathway for them to then start playing under seven.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. That's quite a big range, which is great. What is the ethos, the philosophy of the club?
Well, first and foremost, we believe in fair play, which is obviously also the guidelines by the Football Association. But our philosophy for grassroots football is that football is for everyone and can be played by everyone, regardless of age, gender, religion, ethnicity, or social background and level of fitness. I mean, football is a school of life, you know, with fair play, team spirit, camaraderie, are just a few of the many values which we advocate by the club, you know, through football. And, you know, we always sort of say, you know, football must also be fun. You know, we want kids to come along and enjoy themselves, regardless of whether they win, lose or draw.
Yeah, that's so important. You've put that very well, because that was one of the advices that I gave to my youngest one, which he loves football. He was so stressed about, Mom, I'm not that very good with the technique. I said, as long as you have the passion for it, but you as well, go and enjoy it. You will give your best, because that's when it comes. And you're so right by saying that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that is 100%. I mean, you know, we do have, you know, everybody wants their son or daughter to be the next, you know, England star or international star. But it's more important for them to enjoy playing football than, you know, being put under the pressure.
Absolutely agreed. 100% agreed. From a general perspective, how important would you say exercising is for children, and more to the point, talking about football, how does football help the physical and the mental development of a child from an early age?
Well, I mean, at London Colney Youth, you know, we do feel it's extremely important that children take part in some form of exercise and not sitting playing game consoles. You know, we saw during COVID, you know, a lot of kids who couldn't get out and play and actually, you know, gained a few pounds, and it took for some of them quite a while for them to sort of get back to the level that they were pre-pandemic. You know, but I mean, what we do is that, you know, football training, you know, has many positive impacts on a child's physical and mental development, you know, such as promoting a child's self-esteem, you know, gives the child a sense of belonging, you know, encouraging social skills, improving general fitness, you know, etc. So, you know, we do believe that it's really, really important.
Yeah, and I can see this. And you're right that there's been through stages in the last years that had an advance, unfortunate advance, I say so, that had an impact of not just the children, but parents as well. And we saw just having the freedom of going outside, doing any sports or playing football, how good it was for us. And yeah, being part of a team, I noticed in my children, for example, me being a parent as well, being part of the team it improves so much how they act within a team, how they socialize among them, how they emphasize, you know, it's all about that. And then the physical improvement, which is so good for our children.
I think the other thing as well is quite important to understand as well, that you make your friends within school, but you also make other friends outside of school, and these are not necessarily boys or girls that you are at school with. So you know, you are creating brand new friendships all over the place, really.
Absolutely true, yeah. Which I support. I support this. What is the desired age for a child to start a journey into football if they have the dream of becoming a professional football player?
Oh,
I know.
Wow, that's a million-dollar question. That is, from our experience, I think you know, as I said, you know, we run a soccer school on a Saturday morning at Cottonswick Leisure Centre, and we start from 4 years old. So, you know, I think you know, the earlier that they can start, the better it is. However, mm-hmm. you know, it's never too late to start to play football. You know, because there are some kids who only start playing it when they're in primary school, when they get to year four, year five, year six. And there are even those that in secondary school that all of a sudden they have a liking for football and want to take it up. So, I mean, coming back to the original question, I mean, yes, really from 4 years onwards, you can start to do that. But as I said, it's never too late to start to play.
Okay, yeah, because I think everyone kind of has that information, you know, from all sorts of media platforms. And we know that football players, they start playing football quite early in their lifetime. So that's what I was thinking, because I think as a parent, we will encourage the idea of if you have a dream, follow it. And as you said, it's never too late. But in some sports, it might be so the age that they start the journey, it can be quite important.
Yeah. But it is also a very, very cutthroat business. So, you know, it might, you know, if you are an aspiring football player, you know, you've got to go through a lot of hoops to get to, you know, to be a professional famous footballer. You know, some of the football players that you have today, you know, if you listen to their stories, you know, it was a lot of hard work to get to where they are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's stages, and then there has to be. I mean, because this will be like an extra question from myself, because football players have to go, as you said, through a lot of hoops. There's the parents that are involved in this. And I know that sometimes they feel like there's a lot of time, and not just time, I'm talking financially speaking as well, but a lot of time that they dedicate towards their children, because you have to take them, you have to support them, you have to be there. It's not just the training, it is the football matches as well. So what would you advise the parents? Because I know a lot of them feel like giving up sometimes.
I think you have to sort of look at your son or daughter and sort of take a guide from them as to whether they're playing too much, whether they're training too much, and sort of looking at it from that perspective. Yes, it's a big commitment, but you could say that in any sport, you know, because if you want to succeed at something, you've got to put in the hard graft. And again, you know, you listen to stories of young tennis players or, you know, swimmers or gymnasts. You know, they've had to put in the hard graft to get to where they want to be. And there are a lot of sacrifices along the way, you know, and you as parents, I mean, I've got three kids, and you live your life through your children, and you will do whatever you will do to sort of keep them happy and make them happy. And, you know, if it means that, you know, they do sport and sport is their hobby, then you're sacrificing that for them, you know, and if they are, even if they are not, you know, the superstars, you're there training on a Saturday with them. You're there taking them training on a Saturday and you're watching a match on a Sunday. So, you know, it's very interesting when you speak to sort of those that are at the start of the journey who are, you know, under seven and they're playing competitive matches for the very first time. And the first thing the parents say to us, they say, so training Saturday and matches are Sunday. And we go, yep, that's the end of your weekend.
Yes. Well, I can say that you are absolutely right. And my advice, being in the shoes of a parent, I would say that it's absolutely worth it. I know it's taking a bit of your time on the weekends to support your child, but as you said, it's not just about, I know you will have 100% the thrill of your son, you know, or daughter scoring the first goal or seeing them. You will get that satisfaction, that feeling of, you know, you've accomplished something when you see your child playing. But it's not just that, is you knowing your child will benefit from good exercising, from a healthy life. So it's all winning, I would say. Even if they don't go like a professional level, you know, as a parent, you'll have that feeling that, yes, I have done something very good for my child.
I mean, the other thing as well is you also, as parents, you create brand new friendships. So, you know, I think that's the other thing as well. You have to remember that you're also going on a journey with other parents. So it's not just you. You know, there are other parents who are exactly in the same situation as you are, you know, and that's also important.
Oh, thank you for pointing that out. Actually, I have made good friendships so far. Because it does happen. Yeah, you get into socializing, especially if it's in, you know, in a small community, and not even, but you get into socializing and it's absolutely brilliant. In what professional football league or cups do your teams get to compete?
So Allen County Youth, we play in what is known as the Watford Friendly League. And so all of our teams play in that. They play on Sunday mornings. And then we have teams which are from under 14s upwards, which they also enter into the Hearts County Cup. So, you know, so that we do have those that play in cup competitions as well.
Okay, yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, we did talk about how a football club does not just forms like good players, yeah, because that's the main focus somehow, but also can bring a community together. And we've just mentioned like making new friends, you know, generate new opportunities. Asking this as, you know, talking about this because I kind of found out and saw the importance of London Colney Youth Football Club in the London Colney community and the surroundings, because it's not just, you know, you don't have children just from London Colney. Did it help expand the football club? Did it help, you know, the community in a certain way?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, you know, I 100% agree that you know, we have been a big part of the London Colney community and the surrounding towns. You know, we've got players, as I mentioned before, we've got players who are from London Colney that are at the three primary schools within the town. So obviously, you know, St Bernadette's, Bowman's Green and London Colney JMI. So we've got boys and girls who are from there. And also, you know, sort of the wider area, you know, and we've basically, you know, we forge a lot of friendships, you know, throughout the community. And we work very closely with the parish council. They sort of help us. We've got a very good relationship with Cottonswick Leisure Centre, you know, which is now Everyone Active. So, you know, as a football club, we are helping the community and hopefully, you know, we're getting that back in return as well.
Yeah, no, I think that is definitely happening. And it's absolutely beautiful because we do live in such an amazing, beautiful area. And it's feeling of being part of a community is actually quite beautiful, quite lovely. And I know there's so many football clubs out there and parents and children, of course, they have the options to choose because there's the towns surrounding us, like St Albans, Hatfield, Hemel Hempstead and so on. And which I think is brilliant to have the option because we know And we talked, mentioned before how important is football, not just within the United Kingdom, but internationally speaking. If people would like to find out more about London Colney Youth Football Club on media platform, where can they find useful information about you?
So we're on all platforms. I mean, our website, which is londonconneyyouthfc.club. That's our website. We're also on Facebook. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. So yeah, we're on those platforms, all the main social media platforms. So just the best thing to do is go to our website and then you can follow the social media links from there. But also a lot of ours, we don't necessarily do any advertising because a lot of the way that the club has generated over the years is basically through word of mouth. And as I mentioned earlier, we also have a soccer school, which runs from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock. Every Saturday morning at Cotland Leisure Centre, where if you've got a child who is anything from nursery up to year four at school, very welcome to sort of come along and try it out.
That's perfect. Yeah, well, of course, as I've mentioned, it's good that there's a lot of choices out there and people, you know, they can plan in advance because who doesn't love football? Myself, I have to admit, I've been quite a big fan until I've discovered that I was so passionate about it that I would almost say that I was too passionate about it. So I had to take a break. and now I'm back onto being a supporter of football because I support all the sports. I found the benefits of all the sports from, as we've mentioned, you know, health points of view and this mental and physical health as well. Yeah, thank you so much, John, for kind of going through a bit of your football club and what football means and exercising, you know, generally speaking, for our children and the importance of it. Thank you so much for accepting to join the interview.
No problem at all, Andrea. Thank you very much for inviting me to come and talk about London Colney Youth Football Club.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of our interview, but what I can make you sure of is that we will have other guests onto the parent show talking about different sports and their importance into ours and our children's life. Thank you all for tuning in on Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6 and... as you always know, be blessed and stay happy.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury.
And I'm Karen Hannan. Hello.
How are you doing, Karen?
I'm good. I've just driven 4 hours down the M1 from Leeds.
But... well, that must be a delightful day you've had.
That was fantastic, yeah.
So you're ready for your weekend?
I am, yeah. Thank goodness it's Friday.
Yeah, I know. I get that feeling coming from about midday on Thursday. I start getting excited. But yeah. So our listeners are going to know that we've pre-recorded this interview. And the reason why I've pre-recorded it is because, Karen, we want to know all about Hooves Fest.
Excellent. Yes. So Hooves Fest is happening on the 8th of July and it happens in a place called Marden Hill, which is near Welwyn, Garden City.
Nice.
And Hatfield, sort of between the two. And if you go to www.hoovesfest.co.uk and Eventbrite, you'll find out a lot more about it. But it's year two of this festival. So they started it last year on a wing and a prayer. Thankfully it worked out, so they're running it again this year.
It's a very good sign. It's Mark II, right?
Yeah, and it's like all those things that we like festivals to be, which is, you know, really authentic, not too produced, if you like. Do you know what I mean? Real, I guess, keeping it real. And it's they started it because Therapeutic Hooves, and when I say it, that's the they that I'm talking about, are an organization. They're a charity based in that area who fundamentally started off doing equine therapy for children, young people and adults who are struggling with a variety of things related to their mental health and physical health sometimes. And they do all kinds of therapies, really. They do the equine therapy, but they do any kind of therapy that's going to help any child. So they do art therapy and woodland therapy and all kinds of things, football therapy. They're a fantastic organisation. And the reason that I love them so much is the people that they work with, particularly the children and the young people, often come to them feeling that life is incredibly difficult and not having a particularly positive view of themselves, really. And what they do through some sort of magical, weird osmosis through the therapies that they offer is they transform these young people, or should I say, they create an environment where these young people can transform themselves.
Yeah, lovely.
And they kind of come out of it, you know, stronger, happier, more positive, more confident individuals. And I just think they should be all over the country, which, you know, it's a big ask because half of it's down to Paul and Danielle who run it. So, yeah, so it's their festival, basically.
Brilliant, because when I saw Hooves Fest, I was thinking, is that hooves as in horses' hooves? But you've answered that question perfectly. Yeah. So equine therapy, I have to say, I've never heard of it, but I think any therapy that involves animals is a winner, right?
Yeah, I mean, the animals are there. I guess they're just a medium, a mechanism, as is the art. Because often, particularly if you think about our neurodivergent or, you know, young people, children, or very marginalised groups of young people, you know, it's very difficult, isn't it, when you're in that really difficult space as an adult to try and talk about this stuff that's making life difficult for you with people you've never met before, right? And you know, this model where you're meant to sit in a room and look at someone's face and start telling them your innermost secrets. It's hard enough for adults, but obviously for children, it's even harder. And so they just provide environments, whether that's with the horses or because you're out in the woodland or whatever you're doing. And I'm going to say Paul and Danielle Wainhouse, who head up Therapeutic Hooves, they're just amazing people. Like you feel good just by being with them. So yeah, so that's who they are. And so yeah, the animals are great, but I think it's the combination of them also, I have to say. Yeah.
And tell us, Karen, are you involved in Hooves Fest? Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I am. So my formal arm of what I do is a social enterprise called Newmankind, which is aimed at making the world a better place for people like me and kids like me and families like mine. And we're hosting a tent there this year, which is an inclusive talent and performance tent. So there's going to be all sorts of zones in there where anyone basically who's at the festival, because entry to the tent is free with entry to the festival, can come and do any performance they like. So if you like singing, poetry, dance, whatever it is, you just pitch up. You don't have to apply to do it. You can just come in and do it. There's going to be a creative zone. There's going to be a Lego zone. There's going to be a dress up zone. There's going to be a, what do they call it? Sensory chill out area. So yeah, come along and meet Newmankind. Come along and meet me. I'm going to be doing some stuff about neurodivergence. So if anybody's got any questions,
Sounds absolutely brilliant, Karen. And it sounds like a lovely environment. And so when you say come along, who do you want to come along?
Anyone. I mean, it's aimed, you know, for anyone who I guess mainly identifies as being sort of differently abled, because the idea is to give a space for people who perhaps don't commonly get to show their talents and their passions or share their interests, inspire other people, come and talk about your passion and your interests. Why you love dinosaurs, why you love whatever, you know, the X-Men, planets, whatever. And just you can talk about it. You can show your stuff. You can come and sing and dance. I'm going to be doing some poetry. I write poetry. And so it's just a space to do it. And there's a quiet hour from 10 to 11. So for those people who don't like crowds, lights and all that stuff, you can come up from 10 o'clock till 11 o'clock. And then it's on from the festival's on from 11 till 8, I think. Then I think we're wrapping up about 4, but come along, come and say hello.
That's great. And it's really easy to buy tickets. You just go on the website, and or in fact, as you rightly said, you can just go to Eventbrite and buy the tickets there.
You can. And also you can go to my Instagram page, Newmankind, which is spelt weirdly, so I'm going to spell it for you, which is N-E-U-M-I-N K-I-N-D, so neurominorities it comes from, kind. So if you go onto my Instagram page, there'll be lots of updates about it, more information about what we're doing. Do share it, because I really do want as many people as possible just to come along and benefit and have space to be them and do what they love. So, yeah.
Sounds fantastic, Karen. Sounds like it'll be great fun as well. Not too expensive. Lovely day out, and get there definitely before four if they want to have a bit of chat with you.
Bit of a chat with me, but I mean, the festival itself is also great. I think the evening's a bit more adult, as in music, you know, sort of the sort of stuff that's going on. But yeah, and it's in the middle of a field. It is just beautiful. So yeah, come along.
In and around Tuin is gorgeous, actually, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it's lovely.
Brilliant. So that's 8th of July, Saturday, 8th of July, and in Tuin, just outside Hatfield. So yeah, get yourself outside well and get yourselves over there and buy your tickets in advance so that they can know to expect, what kind of crowd to expect.
Yeah.
Have a great time, Karen.
I will. Yeah, it's going to be great. I'll tell you all about it after.
Brilliant. Lovely to see you.
And you, love.
Hello and welcome to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El Khoury, and we're really, really delighted that you've joined us for this episode of the Parents Show. Tonight, I'm going to be speaking to Rebecca Norman from Raiden Solicitors, and she's a very experienced solicitor on a wide range of family law matters, as we'll be hearing in just a few minutes. So stay tuned. We're going to talk to Rebecca specifically about choice of schools and moving away from schools in and around a divorce. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks a million for joining us on the Parents Show.
Hi there, Lydia. Thanks for having me.
So let's get straight to your role at Raiden Solicitors. Tell us about what you do.
Yeah, I'm a solicitor here in St Albans at the team at Raiden's, and we're family law specialists. We deal with all areas of family law. My day-to-day caseload involves a mix of scenarios arising from relationship breakdowns, and I have a particular interest in complex issues concerning arrangements for children in a separated family.
Yeah, so very, very sensitive but very important issues to deal with as efficiently as possible. So now, one of my favourite subjects in St Albans is choice of schools, because it's, you know, there is plenty to talk about, isn't there? But we are so lucky that we live in a city with so many outstanding schools. We're spoiled for choice between Harpenden, Redbourne, Wead, Hampstead, all the surrounding areas, as well as St Albans, are really, really are chock-a-block with great schools. But being separated or going through divorce must make the whole school choices issue even more complicated than it already is. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this should be approached by parents who are separating or separated?
Absolutely, and quite right about the very good choice of schools in the local area. So firstly, we recognise how stressful these decisions can be. It can sometimes be difficult to agree on important decisions for children when parents are in a relationship. So let alone, particularly if there's been a fractious separation, it can be really hard to come to the table and reach agreement. So the starting point is that as part of exercising parental responsibility, parents are expected to make decisions jointly about a child's education. In an ideal world, both co-parents will be able to discuss and agree these important issues. However, for all sorts of valid reasons, sometimes it's just not possible to agree, and parents need some additional help or support with this. For example, parents may be at polar opposites in respect of state schools versus private school, or whether a child should attend a religious school. So those are just a few of the issues that may be faced when it comes to schooling. So in terms of how can it be approached, solicitors are a really useful resource to access. We can give guidance as to the legal position and options available. It may be that solicitors can signpost a parent to mediation, provide support alongside that process, or assist with correspondence in circumstances where it's just really hard for parents to communicate effectively. So it's our role to work with those parents to try and resolve any dispute over a child's education. As a last resort, if mediation or another form of out-of-court resolution is not suitable, it's possible to ask the court to intervene and make a decision in the absence of an agreement. So that's called a specific issue order in relation to a child's education, and solicitors can assist a parent through that process. So the court will consider the child's welfare with their decision making, and that's the paramount consideration. And that's something that hopefully we can discuss in a bit more detail.
So on that, Rebecca, how soon do you think that parents should start thinking about issues around school choices?
Yeah, I would say as soon as possible. The parents in this area will know best. It can be quite competitive, and it generally doesn't get easier when you're under time pressure. So if you're aware of a school's admission deadline on the horizon or open days are coming up, start broaching the subject with your co-parent. I'm always mindful of catchment areas, deadlines for applications, and also the fact that independent schools can often operate their own timetables rather than the local authority windows for applications. So really, as soon as possible would be the right time to start thinking about schooling choices.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's sound advice for every parent, but especially if you kind of foresee that there might be any difference of opinion, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's entirely possible that during the course of the relationship, the parents might have already had some discussions about what sort of school they'd like to go to, if they've got any favourites in the area. So there might be some common ground already. But like you say, if there's any suggestion that things may not be agreed, it's good to start those discussions sooner rather than later. The risk, of course, being that if you leave it too late, there won't be a place available at your first choice school or the school that best meets your child's needs. So the risk is, even if you make a court application and succeed with that, the outcome still depends on there being a space available at that school for the child. Court proceedings, litigation, it can take some months to be resolved, and that obviously adds to the pressure of an unresolved school application.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's really, really valuable, because time just will take all the pressure off as well, and pressure bound to make a difficult situation even worse. So really, really sound advice there. And tell us, what are the potential pitfalls or trigger points for separated parents, and is there any way to avoid them?
Yeah. One common pitfall that we do sometimes see is parents may seek to involve their child in the decision-making process that's beyond what's perhaps appropriate for the child at that age. Of course, it's natural to want to include the child in discussions about where they are going to go to school, you know, where their friends might be going and whether they've got a preference. But a child might just find that quite overwhelming, particularly if they perceive the decision being placed in their hands, or they might feel caught in the middle of conflict between two parents, and they may feel under pressure to choose or align themselves with one parent. So particularly at a time where the child might be readjusting to life with two separate homes, it's important to recognise how that potential conflict may impact on a child. In terms of other trigger points, it may be the case that one particular parent feels controlled or forced into a decision regarding schools if the subject isn't properly approached, or a parent might just simply feel unheard. So it's good to try and consider schools from the other parent's perspective as well. For example, if it's a fee-paying school on the horizon, think about the other parent's financial position, particularly after separation. Suddenly splitting two households into one can put a real strain on resources. So think about, is this the reason the other person's objecting? And if so, is there a practical solution that can be offered to this to avoid the other parent feeling under pressure? So I would say taking a step back from that situation, thinking about the other people involved, so the parents, and most importantly, the child, and how they may each individually be impacted, can be a really useful way to avoid any such trigger points in this very important decision-making process.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rebecca. That's really, really helpful. And we've been speaking to a few of your colleagues from Raidens over the past few weeks and months. And what I love about it is they always kindly remind us how important it is to keep the child or children at the centre of everything. And that really is a recipe for success when parents can manage to do it. How would you apply that to this situation?
Absolutely. And we always bear in mind that parents are generally the experts on their own child, and they will know what's best for their child, what they're interested in, the scenarios they'll thrive in. So we would always say, absolutely, keep it child focused. And the best way to evaluate potential schools is to look from the child's point of view. Where will their friendship groups be going? Travel times to and from the school? If it's too great a distance, is that going to cause tiredness? Is that going to have a knock-on impact on homework? Are there extracurricular activities that fit this particular child's interests, such as a sport, a drama club? Particularly for younger children, think about class sizes for each school. Does that fit in with this child's personality, their way of learning? So yeah, totally agree with all my previous colleagues have said, being child-focused just keeps help any other tensions that might be going on in the separation from arising in respect of, you know, then impacting this decision on schooling.
Thanks, Rebecca. Now, what happens if one of the parents wants to move away or change town or change city or even change country? Are they allowed? Is it possible? And how does school choice play a role in that scenario?
Yeah, understandably, circumstances may arise where the parent with whom the child or children live wants to move. That could be for a job opportunity, cost of living, or a better quality of life somewhere else in the country. If it's overseas, then again, that's a different scenario where, again, a much bigger move on a larger scale, and the parents will need to consider that as well. So if the move will disrupt the current arrangements for the children, the parent seeking to move should obtain the other parent's agreement in first instance. Parents will, of course, need to seek their own legal advice on each situation as it arises, because all scenarios are different. And there's no clear rule that says a parent can move a certain distance or within a certain radius, but not outside. So it's all very, very case specific. The parent opposing the move, if that is the situation, if it's not agreed, could apply for a prohibited steps order to prevent that move from taking place, or an order specifying that the child will live in a certain location. Or alternatively, the parent wishing to relocate can apply for a specific issue order which permits the move, and if necessary, an order in relation to a change of school if that's going to be necessary as part of the move. So again, the court's going to consider the child's welfare. The parent looking to move should demonstrate that the child will be able to maintain their relationship with the other parent. The parent objecting to the move may have valid reasons to oppose it if it appears their relationship with the child would therefore be limited as a result. So particularly thinking in the context of schools, the parent looking to move is likely to need to demonstrate there will be a good school in the new area. And of course, that can be difficult if the child would be moving in the middle of an academic year, or school places might be limited. So generally speaking, any relocation plan should try and factor in avoiding disruption to the school year. The plan might be to move in the summer holidays, for example, to give a child sufficient time to adjust to the new area before moving to a new school. So these things are all looked at holistically, but certainly all from the welfare of the child.
Excellent. Thanks, Rebecca. And ultimately, like, who gets to decide on something as big as that? Because it feels like there's a lot of factors at play. And when does the child start legitimately or legally having their own voice in this?
So ultimately, if the parents can't agree in exercise of their joint parental responsibility for a child or children, then the family court can, on an application from either parent, step in and make those very important decisions as to whether the parent and child can relocate, what school the child will attend. And the court will base their decision looking at all those factors, but ultimately trying to conclude what's in this child's best interests. And as you properly raise, when does the child start having a voice? And the court is obliged to consider the child's ascertainable wishes and feelings in their decision making. The weight given to a child's voice will depend on the maturity, age, and capacity to understand what's happening. So there's no definitive age, unfortunately, but you'd expect a preteen or early teenager's wishes and feelings to be given increasing weight. So this will be particularly relevant to any secondary school decisions, or indeed if a child needs to move school for whatever reason in the middle of secondary school. The court will want to know the reasons and motivations behind a child's expressed view. So, for example, if a child resists a move because they want to stay near their friends, then again, that's of course important, but the court might consider that the move offers up a better quality of life or access to more opportunities. So it really is weighing up all of those factors in the balance and reaching a decision that's overall in the child's best interests.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. I mean, it's lovely to hear the balance of kind of factors that are taken into consideration when deciding, making an ultimate decision about this. And I was kind of pleased to hear that maturity actually plays a role, because some children at 12 can be incredibly mature and have a very clear vision of where they want to be and what they want to do.
Absolutely. And if this enters into the court arena, then the court's advisory service, CAFCAS, can look into those matters in more detail. And if the court commissions such a report, CAFCAS can interview the child in an age appropriate way and really delve into those wishes and feelings and report back to the court so that the child's voice is heard as well.
Great. Really good to hear. Now, so, I mean, changing schools is stressful for any child, regardless of the circumstances, and having separation or divorce in the mix is really not going to help. So what advice would you give to parents around that, please, Rebecca?
I would encourage all parents to do their research early on school places and take independent legal advice if necessary. Every situation is different because children are unique. They have their own individual needs. So it's important for a parent to take advice on their own specific situation. If parents can agree, that is almost always going to be the best outcome for a child, as opposed to being the subject of court proceedings, which can be lengthy. So if parents are able to communicate directly, and I recognise that it's not always possible or safe to do that, but if parents can communicate with each other, then my advice would be try and open up that dialogue. Keep it as a discussion, for example, saying, I've looked at these schools and I think this one's really good for our child. It's got a good sports department. That's going to benefit them. What do you think? There's an open day coming up. Should we both try and attend? Things like that. Much better than saying, I will be sending our child to this school and leaving it as that. So it's good to look at all the options. Try and consider your second and third place choices as well as your first place choice for schooling for your child, as that might just help find more common ground with the other parent. So keep discussions open, be flexible around these things. It can sometimes be shifting sands. There can be many different factors that will alter why a certain school will be good for a child. So keep everything under review and open up that dialogue if at all possible.
Fantastic. Really wise words, Rebecca. And it's lovely. I love that you even give us kind of vocabulary to use, because that just is such a helpful steer for parents, because, you know, nobody ever plans to get themselves in a situation, and everybody wants the absolute best for their children. So even practicing what you're going to say to make sure that the child stays at the centre is key, because that's ultimately the way that everything will work out for the child and for the separated parents. Thank you so much for your advice and your help. I'm sure that'll be incredibly helpful to our listeners.
Thank you very much. Lovely to speak on this topic.
Now, that was Rebecca Norman from Raiden Solicitors speaking to us today.